Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Market Music with Fairbairn and Russell.
Welcome to the Market Musings podcast, where today we're moving a little bit away from our usual chatter around the stock market and into health. So you've got all your money, you've made all your money in the markets, but what good is that to you if you don't have good health in life? Health is wealth. So we're welcoming Will Newton, who is a health and fitness coach and physical trainer. Good morning, Will.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
No problem. How are you?
I'm doing really well, thank you. You guys?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. And Kenny, how are you?
Yep, I'm in Scotland. It's lovely weather today, which is nice. We always do a bit of weather forecasting for Scotland. Well, it's usually pouring the rain, but today it's actually pretty nice. So
we've got your rain though.
Oh yeah, good, good. We like to export some things. So we do.
Yeah.
But as Mark says, no, it's great to have somebody different on him. Usually we're talking about stock markets and investments and pensions and all sorts of bits and pieces. But as Mark says, there's no point in having all this money if you're like a bus couch like me. So I'm particularly interested in what you've got to say. And the first thing that jumped out from your Twitter page was, my mission is simple, to be in better shape at 70 than most guys are at 20 and to help others be the same.
It's a mission statement and a half, that, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, as a statement, yeah, I mean, I feel that 70 is now and I'm 48, but that's because I can't get off my backside. I'm stuck to these laptops all day. Before we get on to your sort of business side of things, Will, I mean, I've spoke to you briefly before and you've had quite an interesting journey from childhood and you've pretty much been involved with fitness and sports all your life. Could you just maybe give us, you know, take us back maybe 20, 30 years and how growing up in South Africa was and the school that you went to, etc., because it's definitely interesting.
Sure, I can certainly do that for you. I'll try to keep it as short as I can. I grew up in a little place on the southeast coast of South Africa called Port Elizabeth. It's not such a little place anymore, but when I was growing up, it was kind of the size of a large town, but it was referred to as a city because it had a cathedral. Apparently that's how you decide that something's a city or not. And yes, I pretty much my entire life, I've been lucky enough to either take part in sport or physical activity in one way or another. My parents wanted to do the absolute best for me that they could. And they got me into a school in Port Elizabeth. It's called Grey High School, really well known. And it's a very, both academic, but also sport-orientated school. Very much orientated around rugby. To give you an idea of how much rugby there was, if you were in what we call Standard 6 and Standard 7, which were the first 2 years of secondary school, those, you'd have been under 14 in terms of playing your sport or the team that you'd played for. Grey High School had an under 14 rugby teams, an under 14 A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and H team when I was at school.
Crazy.
I wasn't really that great at rugby. I managed to play somewhere down in the F and G teams, which can be quite interesting when you play against other schools and you've got somebody the size of Jonah Lomu running at you. And for a little bit of context, when I was 15, I still wasn't 5 foot tall. So yeah, it was quite interesting from that perspective. Also, to give you an idea of the school's rugby heritage, it's where the current South Africa Springbok captain came from. Apparently he went to school there. And Michael Catt, for those who can remember far enough back to Michael being run over by Jonah Lomu. And then in subsequent years being part of the team that won the World Cup. As part of being at school, we had to play sport. We had to play at least one summer sport and one winter sport. Mm. And they're very, very big grounds. If you go and look at Gray High School on Google Earth, it's enormous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 5 rugby fields, things like that.
Mm.
And so, of course, you know, we played sport, you know, constantly. And I certainly played more than my expected one sport per season. So if it's played with a ball, I've probably played it and I can play it reasonably well. I was never big enough and I'm still not big enough to play rugby well. But I absolutely love rugby as a sport. I think it's fantastic. And, you know, if we play rugby without the tackling physical aspect, I'm probably okay still. So that's okay. Really quite good. I left school and decided that, well, I went to university first of all and got a little bit out of doing as much regular sport as I had been doing. And like most people who go to university, you discover that your fitness drops off quite dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
Then went to the South African Army, which we all had to do. And again, you know, sort of really physical. And I loved the physical side of being in the Army. Again, you know, even I remember doing punishment PT on the beach and laughing at the PTI who was handing out the punishment PT because I was just having so much fun running up and down the beach. This infuriated him, you can imagine.
Yeah.
Having left the Army, then, you know, I started to work and realized that I wasn't maintaining the kind of fitness that I wanted to, just in terms of feeling well and feeling healthy and that kind of thing. And I went and watched a friend of mine do triathlon down on the beachfront one day, and he just happened to win the race that day. And I asked him afterwards, do you think this is something that I could do? And he said, well, you know, you always used to run really well in the school cross country. So, you know, running is not a problem. You rode a bike to school. So, you know, riding a bike is not a problem. And, you know, you can swim. You just need to, you know, do some practice and see how much better you can get at it. And triathlon pretty much took over my life from that point for a good many years. And that's kind of what I did. When I came moved to the UK, the first people I worked for were a retailer who sold triathlon gear. So triathlon was kind of absolutely everything for me. And I did a number of Ironman races, and I discovered that my sort of love for coaching from having done an Ironman race, being a member of a club, and some of the people from the club said to me, oh, you know, wouldn't you come and coach swimming for us for a few weeks? I said, oh, well, you know, I'm not training at the moment because I just finished my big race of the year. I'll go and do a little bit of coaching for you. And it was a period of about 6 weeks that I coached swimming for these guys. And by the end of that time, everybody had improved dramatically. But I discovered for myself the thing that kind of really excited me was helping other people to achieve their physical goals, probably more than what I'd enjoyed doing the Ironman races myself.
Mm.
And I've kind of built since then. I've gone off and qualified as a personal trainer. I've got a whole bunch of coaching qualifications,
mm-hmm.
And gained a huge amount of experience in that sort of area in order to help people with their physical goals. And so I've been lucky. I've coached a number of masters, mountain bike world champions, an adventure racing world champion. But actually, it's probably more satisfying than that is just all the, for want of a better term, regular people who I've helped to get from, you know, sitting on the sofa and thinking, you know, that Ironman thing, I don't know if I could do that. Or, you know, that even that little sprint triathlon around the corner, I don't know if I could do that.
Mm.
And being able to help these people to achieve those things. And that, for me, has been sort of amazingly rewarding and definitely far more rewarding than any of the racing that I've done myself.
Just can you just explain to listeners what, probably for me as well, because what an Ironman actually entails?
Absolutely. So, well, Ironman is a triathlon.
Yep.
So triathlon is a swim, bike, run event. They're done concurrently with no breaks in between, other than the amount of time it takes you to change your shoes or that sort of thing. And so a standard triathlon, normal triathlon that you'd see them do at the Olympics is 1500 meter swim, 40K bike ride, and a 10K run. And the Ironman event is a bit of a brute, really. It's a 2.4 mile swim, a 112 mile bike ride, and then a full marathon.
Yeah, that is serious.
All done in
one day. And you have to finish it. For most races, the cutoff time is 17 hours. There's the odd race where it's 16 and a half. You have to finish it within that time period.
Wow.
I'm trying to think. I mean, a marathon, I mean, a good standard marathon runner, I think, is probably about 3 hours, 3.5 hours. That's probably a reasonable time, I would think.
Yeah, so back in the 70s, the end of the 70s, when marathons appeared, it was kind of considered fairly normal for people to run, or, you know, kind of a creditable time to run a three-hour marathon. And bizarrely, even with all the advancements that we've allegedly had in nutrition and gear, etc., now if you run about a 3.5 hour marathon, that's considered a fairly creditable time. Part of that is the fact that so many more people are doing it. So it's not that we've all got slower. It's just that actually back in the days when marathons started, people running marathons were all very definitely runners. That's what they wanted to do.
Mm.
Whereas now you've got the London Marathon and, you know, there's a bloke running in a rhino costume.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The Tour de York, not the Tour de Yorkshire, but the sort of Tour de Yorkshire for the members of the public. Well, I don't know, maybe it was 3 years ago, and it was blinking hard. I did a little bit of training for it, and I do like getting on my bike. But yeah, it was tough, and I particularly struggle when any kind of incline, and it feels like I'm trying to pedal a tank uphill. It was horrible. I mean, the first part of it was nice. I enjoyed the scenery, but then it got hard. It really did get hard. It's probably one of the toughest things I've actually done, I think. But, you know, I was pleased with my achievement, you know.
You know, bottom line is you finished it, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
and you know, that's the thing for me.
At the finish line, I came and I did this awful incline, horrible incline, and then it was okay. Then there was a huge long down, and then there was another slight incline just as you got into Leeds. And I thought, oh no, don't let this go on. And I thought, I can't stop this time. And I pushed on through it, and I got up this little last bit of incline. I was pleased, and it was all sort of not plain sailing, but much easier. And when we got to the home straight, if you like, and you had all the banners and the signs and the crowds cheering. And I just got this second wind, and I just went mental. I just floored it as fast as I could down this straight. And that was quite a good feeling, I must admit, crossing the finish line there. And then you get your alcohol-free Erdinger, is it, they give you, I think?
Okay. You definitely wanted the one with the alcohol in it there. Well,
yeah. Yeah, no, it was nice. It was good. So, yeah.
Fantastic.
So for an Ironman, well, I mean, obviously it must take over somebody's life. If you're used to sitting on the couch and you decide you're going to do an Ironman, I mean, I know my wife's done many triathlons and marathons before, and I know that marathon training pretty much took over her life for, you know, the sort of final 4 or 5 weeks. So I imagine that an Ironman must be, you know, 2 or 3 times more intense.
Yes and no. A lot of the time it depends on knowing what it is that you're supposed to do in order to get the best result that you can get. So it's possible just to go and do as much random stuff as you can in order to get fit for it. Mm-hmm. Or you can look at something and say, you know, I'm going to do a little bit more than the absolute minimum. And a little bit more than the absolute minimum isn't anywhere near as much as what one would think it is. I think the real trick is understanding that you need to do this over a long enough period to get the result, rather than trying to cram everything into, you know, a short 12-week period, especially if you're starting from being sat on the couch. If you're sat on the couch, you know, you need a year, probably, possibly even a little bit more, to build yourself to that place. You know, can you do it in 12 weeks or, you know, maybe 6 months? Yes, you can. But you probably are going to have to dedicate a significantly larger amount of time to your training than you would if you spread it out over time. So you'd have a much bigger sort of training week in terms of hours.
Yeah.
And that's something I've developed over time, is something I like to call athletic readiness.
Mm.
And this is really an attempt to try to encourage people to be in the kind of shape that would allow you to go and do those sort of events without having to sacrifice your entire life for, you know, a period of a year or more to get there.
Mm.
But it's sort of a state of fitness that doesn't require you to spend hours and hours and hours training. It's something you get to, and then you do enough to maintain that.
Mm.
And then you decide that, okay, maybe I want to go and do that Ironman, and it's going to take me 6 months of focused training to do the Ironman, but you could do that. And you could then return to that state of athletic readiness, as I call it,
mm-hmm.
without sort of spending your entire life, in inverted commas, being an Ironman, which often means that you end up, you know, in one way or another, you end up broken.
Mm.
Because most of the endurance athletes, and certainly endurance athletics is a large part of what I've done, most of the endurance athletes you run into have some sort of long-term injury that they're just nursing. You know, they're training for Ironman and they're nursing shin splints, and they just nurse their shin splints, but they keep training. And you should never really be in a place where you have a long-term injury. You know, if that's the case, then you're almost certainly suffering from some kind of overuse thing. And it's not going to get better by itself. It really is only going to get better by you taking significant time off training. So the answer is not to get there in the first place.
Yeah.
The answer is to be a really well-balanced human. You know, to be a human is to be an athlete.
Mm.
And to be a well-balanced human, and to go from there to these little things where maybe you specialize. Mm-hmm. But you don't live in a place of specialization in terms of sport. Specialization is for elite athletes. No, Usain Bolt has to be a specialist, otherwise he wouldn't be as fast as he is.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody, sort of no average person really, in my view, should be trying to be as specialized as Usain Bolt is.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's face it, he pays his mortgage from that.
Mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm,
yeah. A lot more.
And a lot more. You know, but you look at any professional athlete, that, you know, that is their job. Whereas for you and I doing our sport, it's about relaxing. It's about getting away from the pressures of being at work.
Mm.
It's those kind of things. It's meant to be something that's positive for us.
Mm-hmm.
And when you specialize in an area, what you do is you go and add extra stress, and then something else breaks. And then you're so focused on wanting to do your triathlon that you're now less effective in the rest of your life because you're worrying about your sore knee.
Yeah.
Why do that to yourself?
It's not nice. I went through a phase where I was doing a lot of weightlifting, I really enjoyed it, but I got very fixated on it as well, and always wanting to get bigger, I suppose. I don't think I dislocated my shoulder, but I very nearly did if I didn't on the bench press. It was very painful. I nearly fainted, actually, when it happened. I really thought I'd done myself some damage. And, you know, it put me out probably for a year at least.
Yeah.
And I slowly started to do stuff again, but you know, everything I was pushing for on that sort of bench press just stopped. And even now, I still have a lack of the full stretch mobility that I had in my left shoulder. So obviously damaged.
Yeah.
I think it's the rotator cuff, it's called, I think, that I either tore or did some damage to. It's just disappointing when that happens. I changed what I did. So instead of pushing for that, I obviously went through a phase where I don't know, wanted to look good for the girls or whatever. And now I do more calisthenics. So it's more about strength for me and controlled strength. Rather than going for that bulky mass and down in protein shakes, I go for the more sort of strength and the athletic side of things. So I have some Olympic rings that I use. But I tell you what I struggle with, and it's been particularly bad recently. I mean, I got, whether it was COVID-19 or a different flu, but I got that and said to my wife early March. So obviously, you know, you don't train when you're feeling rough. But then, of course, the whole virus thing kicked off and work went very different and it was very stressful. And I haven't really focused on training for that time. I've done a bit here and there during that, but my daily routine just has stopped. And then it's always difficult to get back into it, I think, isn't it? To sort of refine that focus. Do you have any sort of tips for people, to discipline, I suppose, to get into that? Or when's a good time to train? I mean, I've always thought of getting up in the morning, doing a bit of yoga, and then doing a bit of stretching, and then doing a workout. But it's easier said than done.
Sure. I think that, well, in terms of getting back into it, it can be really daunting to look at something and say, wow, that's what I used to do, and so that's what I need to do. And a lot of the time we make that mistake because we think that the workout we used to do is the workout we need to do, even if you scale it. So, you know, let's say you're going running is easier to, most people identify with running a little bit more than lifting, but the principle is the same. You could say, okay, what most people do is they say, okay, I used to run an hour, so I'm going to go and run an hour. Well, running for an hour is actually incredibly hard on your body. So, you know, you need to kind of scale that back and say, okay, well, actually, I'm just going to go and run for 20 minutes. Because then I don't get the same soreness that I was going to get if I ran for an hour. That would be, you know, part of it. The other part of this is, again, because it all looks like it's such a big thing to get back into, is not to tie yourself to the fact that you have to do the whole workout. It's to say to yourself, you know what, I'm going to go and do a warm-up and 5 minutes.
Okay.
So I'll do the warm-up and the first 5 minutes. I'll sketch out some stuff that I might do when I finish that 5 minutes, but I'll just do the first 5 minutes today. And funnily enough, most people find that when they've done the warm-up and the first 5 minutes, the rest of the workout just happens because actually, yeah, it feels quite good. I did that. I managed to do my ring pull-ups and actually they were feeling pretty good, you know. I'll do whatever the next thing would have been, and then the next thing, and then the next thing. It only takes a week or two if you actually start to feel like actually this is something I miss if I don't do it. I think you probably identify when you were doing your calisthenics regularly that it was something that was, you know, something you enjoyed doing, and you you know, you missed if you found that suddenly you had, I don't know what time, whatever time you were doing it. Let's say you were doing it in the evening and you had, you know, suddenly you had a late meeting and then you missed out on your calisthenics workout. It was something that you actually really missed doing. You kind of went, oh, gee, you know, it's a real pity I couldn't do that. The problem humans have is that we're really good at inertia. So we kind of go, oh, I haven't done it today. And then I don't do it tomorrow. And then 3 weeks time, I still haven't done it. And then I never do it again. Because I look at that, use my hours running thing again. I look at the hours running and I think there's no way I could run for an hour now. So there's no point running. Actually, you know what? I'll do a bit of a warm up and I'm going to go and run the first 5 minutes. And I might end up running the 20 minutes that I plan to run.
Yeah, cool.
So that's kind of my top tip for getting back into it. Don't make yourself do the whole workout or don't even commit to the whole workout. Commit to a warm up plus 5 minutes.
Yeah. But the thing is, it doesn't become fun, does it? If you struggle through it and resent doing it, there's no point really, is there? You want to feel good about what you're doing. So I mean, and in terms of, let's say, different workout sessions or different exercises, is there a good balance to have, like, you know, cardiovascular or weights or strength exercises, or would you say it really people have perhaps got to find what turns them on or what makes them feel good?
Yeah, so the best exercise or the best sport for you to do, the best workout regime for you to do is the one you're going to do.
Absolutely.
However, we need to be careful that doesn't become something that's massively specialist. So if you're lifting, being a you know, being a powerlifter who never does any cardio isn't doing you any favors.
Mm-hmm.
But in exactly the same way, being an Ironman triathlete who never does any resistance workouts isn't doing you any favors either.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to have a balance of those things. So you need to have a good balance of strength, cardiovascular fitness, what I call mobility, and people would kind of talk about flexibility.
Mm.
The definitions are a little bit different, but you know, mobility, flexibility, you need to have those that as part of your program as well. And so if you want to be the best you can be physically, just as a human athlete, you need to have a good balance of those various things, not specialize into one thing. You know, as I said before, you know, elite athletes specialize into things because they pay their mortgages that way.
Yeah.
But the rest of us, a good balance, and then saying, okay, I'm well balanced, but I'm a well balanced lifter.
Mm.
Or I'm well balanced, but I'm a well balanced endurance athlete. That's where my leaning is. Mm-hmm. But I'm never losing sight of the fact that I need to be able to touch my toes.
Yeah, yeah,
I need to be able to pick my 5-year-old daughter up off the floor.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the saddest things that I heard once. Is somebody I'd coached to a world championship in mountain biking, who got hold of me a few years afterwards, and he said, "Will, I need some help." I said, "What do you need help with? Strength? What, you know, what's going on? Why do you think you're not strong? I can't pick up my 5-year-old daughter off the floor."
Mm.
And this is a guy who'd won a Masters mountain biking world championship.
Wow.
Yeah. And so he'd specialized so much into that thing of being, you know, fast on a bike, you know, and he'd got sort of small and thin and, you know, he'd done everything he could to manage his weight, et cetera, and completely left the strength element out.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, at that point, he'd gone away from riding mountain bikes and he'd been riding road bikes. Mm. So he was even smaller, you know, and he'd been so focused on his, on being, you know, thin and lean and everything else.
Interesting stuff when you talk about the balance. So I assume you've taken all these different things you've learned over the years, Bill, and now obviously this is your full-time job or business. So what is your business actually? What do you actually do for people on a day-to-day basis or you know, over a period of several months?
Okay, so I provide personal coaching. It started off as very much coaching just towards, you know, being able to do those events that we were talking about. Then I developed a real interest in the health and nutrition side of it. And so I've kind of grown my knowledge, especially in the area of actually keep getting people healthy to start off with. And what I do is one of three things. So there's probably three groups that I work with. There's people I work with who simply want to become healthier, get themselves into better shape, lose a bit of weight, those types of things. And so I work with people to do that. So we sort out their nutrition. We sort out a good balanced training program for them, those types of things. Then I've got people who are working towards this kind of athletic readiness thing. They're very much wanting to set themselves some standards that they want to achieve and then maintain. You'd say, you know, how much can they lift, say, in a deadlift? Or, you know, you mentioned bench press before. You know, what do they think is a good standard to achieve for a bench press that they could maintain? So I work with people to achieve that sort of thing. And then I also coach people towards the specific events, which is what I started off doing originally when I started coaching. So, you know, you come to me, you say, look, I'd like to go and do Ironman France. Then we build a program for you to go and do Ironman France, basically. And I try to encourage people to take as long-term a view of that as they can, you know, thinking about aiming more towards the training for, you know, a year towards that than, you know, just training for 6 months, if that's what they come to me specifically for. if you're one of the guys who's kind of achieved those athletic readiness things, then actually we can almost certainly say, look, in 6 months' time, you'd be able to do that Ironman and actually probably do quite well. And so it's very much an individual coaching business. And then at the moment, I'm looking at putting together some group coaching things to say, well, actually, there are certainly people out there who say, well, you know, I'd like some coaching, but, you know, I don't really feel like I need to have, you know, individual coaching. I would actually quite like to be part of a sort of a little community that's working towards something.
All right. So you do some of these sessions remotely, just now? Well, obviously, COVID has obviously changed your business model dramatically.
Well, that wasn't very clear. So I do some face-to-face stuff, but actually that's quite limited. It's coaching-wise, it's all remote coaching, pretty much. So, I mean, you can absolutely, as part of your coaching, you come and see me. You know, if you want to come down to North Devon, where I'm based, you know, and I can take you out for a sea swim, or, you know, we can go running, go ride bikes, and, you know, I can run some sessions for you. We can go do some strength stuff in the gym. But that's not the bulk of what I do. The bulk of it is remote coaching stuff. So I use a fair bit of technology to help people to be able to do these things at home. And we're, you know, I make loads of videos for people where somebody will say, oh, you know, I just wanted to, you know, I was finding this really hard. Can you help me with it? And I either get them to send me video and I can have a look at what they're doing, but then I can also send them video back. I love mobile phones. I think it's just amazing. Mobile phone cameras. Send them a quick piece of video back and say, okay, well, you were doing this. This is what you actually should be doing in order to get the most out of this.
If you're active on a daily basis, then you feel good, don't you? And then you feel good for the rest of the day, and you feel you can almost take on the world, which is anything in business. That's a great thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think, you know, we referenced in the beginning the thing that's on top of my Twitter that, you know, says, you know, my goal is to get people to a place where they're fitter at 70 than what most people are at 20.
Mm.
And to feel that, you know, you talk about that unstoppability. Well, just to know that, you know what, there's 20-year-olds who are nowhere near as fit as I am. There are 20-year-olds who aren't in as good a shape as I am. Is, you know, just it does. It provides that kind of sense of unstoppability. And, you know, we used to have that, you know, let's face it, three blokes talking, you know, we used to have that when you were kind of 16, 17, 20, early 20s. You know, we were absolutely invincible. And, you know, not just on a, you know, not just in your head, but actually largely physically as well. And so it's, yeah, I think you're right. You know, it's just building that sense of, you know what, I don't have to just, you know, fall apart as I get older and older. There's absolutely no reason for that. You know, I know people on Twitter, you know, Twitter is where I spend most of my social media time, who are in their 60s, who are those guys who are examples of what you can achieve. Who way, way, way outstrip what most 20-year-olds are. And I like to believe that I'm in that category, but to a degree, have to let other people judge whether you really are that fit or or in that good a shape.
And so go on then. Let's get Kenny active. What are you going to do, Kenny?
Probably need to lose a lot of weight to begin with. So I think I've already told Will in the previous call, and I'm 6'2". I'm going to say my fighting weight's probably 16 stone. That would be my ideal weight, but I'm over 20 stone at the moment. But it's just because I'm sitting down, not doing any exercise whatsoever, and then I drink too much beer. That's the only weights I do is just lifting cans. Really, that's about it. Which is not
ideal.
They
weigh about 330 grams, don't they?
Yeah, but you can. you can do 400 of them. You know, it's good.
That's true. That's a lot of reps there.
Yeah. No, it's not an ideal situation to begin in. obviously I'm 48, you know, that big 50's coming and I'm like, you know, I can feel it. I mean, I've got a sore back as it is just now. Unfortunately, I had a hip operation when I was younger and one of my legs is slightly shorter than the other one. And every now and then there's a weak spot in my back, which probably has came about from that. So I'm hobbling about and putting TENS machines on, trying to get the muscle to relax so I can stand up straight. But a lot of it's down to weight as well. So I know I need to change because as much as I can keep mentally working 7 days a week, physically, I feel like a 70-year-old at the moment. But that's just my lifestyle at the moment. And it's trying to get that balance. So I probably need a kick up the arse. That's what I need, basically.
Well, my first question, Kenny, is what would you be willing to do?
Well, when I was working, I was cycling every day, so I'm not an issue cycling. And I like the cycling because it doesn't knock hell out of me. I can run as well. I'd done a 10K a couple of years ago, which, okay, it's not a marathon, but for a guy, it was 17, 18 stone. 10K was pretty decent for me. And I think I'd done it in 64 minutes. And I've done a 5K in 27, but that killed me as well. And the only reason I did it in 27 minutes was because I didn't want to be last. I was second or third last, and I was like, there's no way I'm being last. But I paid for it. For the 2 weeks after that, I was absolutely crippled because I was so out of my comfort zone, you know. But so there is a bit of fitness in me if I just can get focused and dedicated and stay off the beer. But I think the weight loss has to come first. I need to lose a couple of stone, you know, sort of 10% of your body weight, just so your joints are no killing at the, you know, a 1.5 mile run or something like that. And the recovery is just terrible for me. I'm not built for running this weight.
I think two things. First of all, the weight loss is important, and exercise is probably not the best way to go about losing your weight. In fact, exercise is not the best way to go about losing weight. Our dear governments and their various sport-related quangos love to try to tell us that, it's just about exercise more. Exercise is incredibly poor way to control your weight. Diet is the thing that you have to do to control your weight, no question. And so certainly some things to look at there. When it comes to exercise, I'm well known for saying that I believe everybody should run, but that not everybody should run right now. And what I mean by that is that if you have orthopedic injuries that you need to resolve, then you need to resolve those before you try running. That just kind of makes sense. But the other one is also that if you are significantly overweight, then you absolutely shouldn't be running now. And unfortunately, running seems to be the thing that people take to first when they think about, oh, I need to lose a bit of weight. So the fact that you ride a bicycle is far, far better for you until you've lost the weight that you feel you need to lose. That makes sense. Because cycling, there's no impact issues with cycling.
Yeah.
Whereas people take up running because they go, oh, I need to lose a few pounds. I'll go out for a run. And you see them out, you know, usually on the 1st of January, maybe the 2nd of January when the hangovers have worn off. And it's fantastic that they're doing something for their health, but they're only out there running for about a week before they injure themselves. And then they spend the rest of the year not running. But they'd been better off doing something about their diet and actually finding a non-impact exercise to start with. And then actually building up and getting to a place where they do run. And I'm a firm believer that humans are designed to run. It's one of the things that helped to make us human in the first place. But the Western humans, where we've managed to get to with our society and what that does to our bodies, is actually you need to not head out of the door and start running today. You're better off heading out of the door and riding a bike, going and getting a rowing machine, although those are just instruments of torture, or finding something else, going swimming. You know, these are the kind of things that make much, much more sense in terms of getting into better shape.
Yeah. No, definitely the weight for me is the first thing. It's and my wife's, I mean, she's constantly nagging me. And I find it quite easy to lose weight when I get in the zone, but yeah. I just can't seem to get my head in that space at the moment. And it's probably just because I'm just engrossed in work, and it's always a tomorrow, you know, sure. Another day. And I know it sounds a terrible thing. I probably need a wee, you know, a wee trip to doctors and say, look, can you do an MOT? You know, and if it comes back and says your blood pressure's high, or I'm probably needing a wee fright, but I won't go to doctors and ask for an MOT. I don't know, it's just not my style, but I probably need a wee warning that I can't keep going on like this. But
you can give yourself a fright.
Sorry?
You can give yourself a fright, and it'll cost you virtually no time and almost no effort.
Go on, tell me.
You find a tape measure.
Yeah.
You see a kind of soft dressmaker's type tape measure, you know, but you could probably do it with a builder's tape measure if you really wanted to. But a tape measure. Measure the circumference of your waist an inch above your belly button.
Okay.
Okay. And then divide that number by your height.
Okay. Okay. I will
Healthy is anything under 0.5. Actually, 0.5. I think it's 0.51 for men, but we'll go for 0.5. So healthy is anything below 0.5. If it's above 0.5, you definitely have work to do.
But after this podcast, I will go and find the tapes and the sewing tin, I think, and I'll try and find my belly button first, and then we'll go. and then we'll go. Yeah. Would you say an inch above your belly button?
Yeah, about an inch above your belly button. Doesn't have to be super super accurate, but an inch above your belly button. Take that measurement, divide it by your height. And healthy is below 0.5.
Hey, Mark, you have to do this as well. So you have.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, and we'll get a comparison. But there we go. But no, I've been on your website, Will, and I've downloaded, there's a report that you can, or a mailing list you can subscribe to. So. Yeah, you've got my attention. I do need to do something. And listen, I'm not the only person out there. There's probably tons of people who are going to be listening to this podcast, and you know, investors. Some of the investors have made tremendous amounts of money in the last 3 or 4 months. And as sure. Mark said at the beginning of the podcast, you know, what's the point of having £250,000 cash? You know, if you can't walk the length of your cell, go and get a paper, you know, down the street or whatever, you know.
We live in an environment that encourages us to put on weight like that. And it's, you know, it's gaining an understanding of, you know, why we are where we are and what we can do to change it. And then, yeah, probably the tricky bit is making that first step towards to making those changes.
I mean, I always just used to, you know, I used to work, you know, and the guys in the office were saying, oh, I should come up to the danger age, you know, mid-40s, and I could just laugh it off. So you do, but then you're like, I'm 48 now, I'm nearly 50. You know, where's the last 30 years gone? So, you know, and I want another 30 years after this. So I need to do something soon. But, you know, I'll do that tape measure test, and I'll decide if I'm going to tweet it out or not. You know, if it's ridiculous, I may just message you privately. Mark will probably do it anyway. Yeah. So he'll take the mickey out of me. But, no, Mark's right. I do need to go off Mars. That's,
I think it's well worth doing. It's well worth everybody doing it. You know, you can often think, yeah, no, I'm absolutely fine, until you actually go and do that. And you say, well, actually, you know what? There's some work to be done there. And that your abdominal fat stores are your kind of big risk factor for, you know, those really nasty life-limiting diseases that you can develop, you know, type 2 diabetes being, you know, arguably the nastiest of them, because it's probably the root of all the others. And, you know, it certainly if you're to believe the sort of standard medical doctrine on it, you know, it is basically a degenerative disease from which you can't recover. Now, that's, I don't believe that to be true, but certainly the way that it is treated, using the kind of standard model, it is basically, you know, I take insulin and other drugs for the rest of my life, and, you know, it has some really nasty complications. So it's definitely something worth being aware of.
Mark, have you got anything to finish off?
No, so thank you very much for your time.
No, you're more than welcome. It's been great. I could talk about this forever, as you can tell.
Yeah, no, it's been great having you on. And thanks for the time. And
you're more than welcome.
Yeah, no, that's great. Thank you very much, Will. Looking forward to talk again.
Yeah, that'll be fantastic.
Great. Right. Thank you very much.
Cheers, Will. Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yes, bye now.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Tune in next time.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.